to the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN Community Radio, licensed in Bella Vista, California, and transmitting from Round Mountain. Here, we explore the lives of triumphant humans who endure life's persistent challenges. They all come from walks of life resembling lives like you, our listener. Our guests are driven by passion and inspiration and live with a compelling sense of purpose. Their persistence, perseverance are many times brought on by tragic episodes or by wonderfully cradle lives. But for whatever reason, guests will be openly share their innermost feelings and beliefs that fuel their works. With this determination, courage, and insistence, they are driven to put more into life than they take out. Please listen to how these inspirational stories may be closely related to your own. And yes, I am Henry Cuenca. Today's guest, a prominent civic leader, a highly successful rancher, mother, grandmother, who holds a biography of participation in community affairs as long as rap sheets of lifelong detainees. Her family roots, well established by faith and family and service, embraced by her mother's loving, everlasting support. Her father, being the family taskmaster, contributed to her lifelong quest of discipline and service. This lady, being well accomplished, has experienced many trials and setbacks. However, through these misfortunes, they have paved the way towards her passion of betterment for the mentally infirmed. It gives me great pleasure to introduce Mary Rickert, managing partners with her husband, Jim Rickert, of Prather Ranch. She currently serves as District 3 Shasta County Supervisor. And you would also like to know in that one of her best states of life, it is walking through grasses and cutting thistle. Mary Rickert, welcome to our show.
Thank you, Henry. I can't tell you how much I appreciate the opportunity to be one of your guests today.
Well, Mary, there's a lot of buzz on the street on your appearing today, and I know our listeners are very, very anxious to hear from you. Mary, we have so much ground to cover. I slipped a note to Shane to ask him whether we might fudge and take 2 hours instead of one, but he says, no, we're hell here on one.
I'll just talk fast.
There you go. I love that. Mary, why don't we start out, why don't you explain to us the Prather Ranch operations? It has such a high recognition, even down in the Bay Area, Prather Ranch. So why don't you give us an overview of that?
Well, my husband and I are been in agriculture all of our life, and we met at Cal Poly in 1973. We were married. Our 45th wedding anniversary is just coming up next month, and he started in the field of ag appraisal and farm management. And in 1979, we got involved with a gentleman by the name of Walter Ralphs of the Ralphs Supermarket family from Southern California.
Right.
And Mr. Ralphs had a ranch in Siskiyou County and needed some help. He lived in Beverly Hills. And we went to work with Mr. Ralphs in 1979. And that was a turning point for Prather Ranch. We kind of started at that point and developed worked on the cow-calf herd. And there was part of the hay production side of the ranch. But in 1990 was basically a real turning point. And at that point, we were approached by a plastic surgeon from Redding, by the name of Dr. Terry Knapp. And for the old timers in Shasta County, they might recognize that name. And he had developed a patent for collagen.
Collagen.
And it's derived from bovine hides, cow hides.
Uh-huh.
And at that time, if for those of you that are a little remember a little bit about 10, 20 years ago, actresses and a lot of women that were really concerned about their appearance would use bovine collagen primarily in their lips. And so for that's how we initially got into the biomedical part of the business. And that was in 1990. In 1995, we built a USDA federally inspected slaughterhouse on the property. It's right next to our feed yard. And as a matter of fact, my husband is on the kill floor this morning. Every Tuesday morning, 52 weeks out of the year, we slaughter beef. And we usually slaughter a very small number. Averages about 20 head per week. And so we like to look at our beef as kind of an artisanal product. We sell about 70% of the meat in the San Francisco Bay Area. It's been well received. We have an outlet. We're connected with a gentleman that has an outlet. It's called Prather Ranch Meat Company at the Ferry Building. And we're at a lot of farmers markets in the Bay Area. We also provide meat locally in Klamath Falls, Mount Shasta, Redding. And then we have people contact us directly, and they can get it from the ranch in a half of a half. But one thing about the Prather Ranch herd is that we do a lot of, I guess you could say, extra activities. One is we have to do extensive record keeping as a result as the requirements from the different biomedical companies that we supply product for. So we're audited very, very frequently. Another thing that's been very important to me, in 2003, we were the third purveyor in the country to be certified humane. So once a year, I go through
a significant milestone.
I go through an audit with an auditor that comes on the ranch, and I spend about 3 days with them, and we go around and they inspect all of our husbandry practices to ensure that everything we do, that these cattle are raised in the most humane way possible, including these I call harvest process. It's a little gentler word.
No, but it is, essentially, if you look at it that way. They are harvested, right?
Exactly. Right. And I'm really excited. This is a great segue. This week, we have coming to Redding, of all places, Dr. Temple Grandin.
Oh, yes.
Dr. Temple Grandin, Jim and I have known her for years. We knew her before she was famous. And so I'm real excited. I'll be seeing her this Thursday night and Friday. She'll be in Red Bluff. But she's on the board of directors of the Humane Farm Animal Care. This is the organization that we are audited by every year. And it basically is to ensure that these animals have the best quality life ever. So I hope those of your listeners have the opportunity. I know that within 24 hours, the tickets for the Cascade Theater were reserved. And yes, she's
We tried to get you tickets.
I wished I'd have known. I could have gotten you some. But anyway, we're real excited that she's coming to town. I'm going to encourage Trina, the head of the Shasta College Ag Department, to try and get her to come back soon, because there's been such a resounding response to her coming to the North State. And she's an amazing person. I loved her movie, and I highly recommend to any of your listeners, if they have not watched her movie, please watch. It's called Temple Grandin. You can probably get it on Netflix.
That's terrific. Mary, you oversee some 40,000 acres. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Is that all on one parcel?
Or? Oh, no. We operate in five different counties. It's Shasta, Siskiyou, Tehama, Glenn, and Colusa. And the cattle are moved in the wintertime, this time of year, down to the Colusa, Glenn, and Tehama properties, some in Shasta County. And then in the summertime, they're back up in the mountains. And that way, it's a much kind of a better management practices for the land. In the wintertime, they're not up in the cold. You don't have to feed hay. The cattle do better in the Mediterranean climate. And in the summertime, they're up in Fall River Valley or Siskiyou County on summer pasture. And so it's just healthier for the animals.
To oversee such a big operation, You do have help. It's not
just
you and
absolutely.
Your husband.
Absolutely. We have a tremendous crew that work with us, and I consider them all family. They're just wonderful people, and we try to take care of them in any way we can and help them out with all kinds of personal issues or whatever. So they're a great group of people, and we're very fortunate and very blessed to have them.
And how big of a staff do you have, Jim?
Well, I have two or three different payrolls. I've got We have about a total of about 30, 35 people. In the summer, it, of course, increases with the hay process. So it's a good group of people, but we were really fortunate to have them on board.
Absolutely. Yeah, I had we stopped in at Pier 39, and I think it was in San Francisco, and we had some of your sticks, you know.
Good. Great.
Yeah, terrific. Right?
Good.
Very, very popular.
Yes.
I mean, you have to stand
yes.
in line an awful long time
yes.
to get those things.
Yes.
What is the biggest challenge that you find in the operations of the ranch?
Well, probably commodity prices, of course. Uh-huh. You know, the last couple of years have been a little challenging with hay prices have dropped. Dairy business is really tough right now. I have a brother that is a dairyman, and he'll probably lose an average of $30,000, $40,000 a month this
really?
Year.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, right now, with milk prices down, he primarily sells his. So basically, you know, you're so dependent on commodity prices. Our beef prices are pretty stable because we have a niche market, and mm-hmm. so that's not so much of a problem with us. But, you know, regulations in California are very, very prohibitive,
no
and
question.
They continue to cost us more money, and then the time and energy expended to kind of to basically follow all the laws and regulations sure. is really difficult
right,
too.
Thick.
And then probably the third thing I want to mention is Mother Nature. She's never, she's great, but this year we're kind of in a very dry spell,
Absolutely.
And so we're going to have to. We're talking about having to make some changes in our cattle management practices this mm-hmm. year. And every year is different. Last year, as you know, we had record
Tremendous
rainfall
rain,
and snow,
right.
and mm-hmm. and this year is just the opposite. So you just never know. So Mother Nature is another component that's really difficult to predict.
I know that that your day starts about 4:30
I start early.
And so tell us what your essential operations are when you wake up at that hour. And we're just touching on one little tentacle of your life.
Right,
I mean, there's
right.
so much more, but which we're going to get into. But you're up at 4:30 in the morning.
Sometimes, yes. Sometimes yeah. I might not quite 4:30, but a lot of times I was very up very early this morning to get here in time. You know, we live in MacArthur. I always say I'm registered to vote in MacArthur. And last week on Tuesday, we didn't have a Shasta County Board of Supervisors meeting. So I was in McDole last Tuesday morning, and mm-hmm. I was out. It was about 8 degrees, and I was outside kind of picking up twine and that kind of thing, looking at the cows while the slaughter was going on. So I make the rounds. There's no doubt about it.
And you turn in at night about 10:30.
Yes, about then. I try to get some reading done. I do a lot of my reading at night.
I know that you read inspirational stories.
Yes,
can
I do.
Can you tell us some of your readings?
Well, I like to read a lot of books, spiritual books, and uh-huh. Mother Teresa is of particular interest to me, having been born and raised a Catholic. Mm-hmm. I find her very, very inspirational. I have a brother that was head of an agricultural leadership program that met with her twice. So, and my mother always really thought very highly of Mother Teresa, and I like to read a lot about her. I like to read about the lives of saints, too. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting.
Very inspirational. Mm-hmm. I totally agree. Okay, we're going to have to take a break here in a minute. How many heads of cattle do you have?
We are running about 1,500 mother cows right now.
Uh-huh.
So then you add in your yearlings, your bulls. We have a spring calving herd and a fall calving herd. Only cattlemen would really appreciate that. But uh-huh. it gets a little complicated because we have to calve year-round because we have to have a steady supply of beef for our slaughterhouse. So it's a little more complicated than your average operation.
Uh-huh. I have a little story to introduce that I think that you're going to find and our listeners are going to find very, very amusing. But we have to take a break right
sure.
now. So when we come back, I want to lay something on you that I think that you're going to find very, very, very interesting.
Looking forward to it.
Okay. In a small break. This is Henry Cuenca, the Henry Cuenca Radio Show, and my guest today is Mary Rickert of Prather Ranch and County Supervisor in Shasta County, and we'll be back with you in just one moment. Hang on there. We're back live with Mary Rickert, and this is KKRN in Bella Vista, California. Mary, I know you you said that that you have about 1,500 head of cattle. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you a little story that I heard, and this has to be with about your grandson.
Oh, yes.
Okay. And grandson's in first or second grade, and he was attending school early in the school year. And the teacher was asking all of the students to go up onto the board, write down the name of their the type of pet they have, whether it was a goldfish or whether it was a gopher or a dog or a cat or what have you, and to give the name of that animal. So all the kids go up and they wrote a cat right up and they write the cat and the cat's name is Puffin and so forth and so on. And your grandson walked up to the blackboard, as they were instructed to do, and he says, well, I have 1,500 pets.
Yes, he did.
They're cows. And the teacher was just stunned, and she says, well, Ashton, I don't think you need to name every one of them for us.
Yes, that is a true story, and I actually have on my phone a picture of his little scrub. You know, he just wrote this down on the board, and I'm sure his teacher was like, "Well, he's a little different." But he, Ashton,
what a beautiful story!
Yeah, he's a special boy, and I appreciate you sharing that story.
Oh, but that's a beautiful story, absolutely. So Mary, let's go back and tell us about your earlier years. I knew you were born in California.
Yes,
so
I was.
Give us a little background as to your growing up years.
I'm a fourth generation Californian, and I was born in Kings County in Hanford. Mm-hmm. And I am one of six children. I have four brothers and a sister. I was blessed. My father at the time was an ag teacher, and my mother was also a teacher. She graduated from Berkeley. My dad always made sure that we were busy, and so we always lived on small little farms, you know, mm-hmm. of about 40 acres, and we always had all kinds of sheep and pigs, and of course dairy cattle, as where I was a dairy science major at Cal Poly, and we had peach orchards, walnuts. So we had cotton. I can remember getting up and chopping weeds in the cotton field before I had to go to elementary school. So,
really?
Yes.
That's why you enjoy cutting thistle.
I do. He had an incredible work ethic, and he passed down to all six of us. And all my siblings have done very well in life. And I appreciate it so much now at the age of 65. I really do appreciate the fact that, you know, he really insisted that we do our part. And I would say that we were very unspoiled.
Mary, what was the biggest influence that you think that your father had on you as you have evolved through life?
He always taught me about the sense of right and wrong. Mm-hmm. He was a man of very high moral character. I know, especially in when I was growing up, he was an ag teacher, and he also really inspired a lot of young men. There were a lot of young Portuguese and Dutch children in the mm-hmm. Kings County area. And there, to this day, I run into people that will tell me about, gee, your dad went to my parents, said, gee, I want to get your son into our FFA program. And these kids wouldn't have even gone on to college. And some of them were very, very successful. Mm-hmm. He's had two of his former students that were vice chancellor for the UC systems. He's had something like 20 or 30 go into ag teaching, which
so
is
he was a mentor and inspiration to an awful lot of people.
He was. And he really... he was very competitive. He, when he was head of the department, there was about nine ag teachers in the Hanford ag department at the time, in the 60s, and he had more state championship teams than any teacher. He had all kinds of records broke all kinds of records mm-hmm. in the state. So he really taught young people to be disciplined, to work hard. They would come in during their lunch hour at school and practice judging so that they would compete at state finals and do it very, very well. But everything he did was you always did your very best. He was a perfectionist, and you did your very best. And that was something that he also taught me, always do your homework. You know, you educate yourself on whatever issue you're going to cover, and it was really a. I was very fortunate.
So you still practice that? That.
Well, it's part of my DNA.
Right.
My siblings all tell me you take after Dad in lots of ways, and in the sense that I have his same intensity and drive, and I have other siblings that are the same way. You'd have to be a dairyman. My one brother works all the time.
You know, when I was working in the ranches in Santa Clara Valley, my boss Lester, you used to say that you can always pick out a great rancher, as they are always outstanding
in their field, right? Well, that's for sure, and I just love being outdoors, and anytime I'm. You know, don't have as much time these days to be out with the cattle. There are days, especially on Tuesdays at board meetings, that I often reflect thinking, gee, if cows are a lot less verbose.
You know, I read in your biography, and I actually counted, that there are 38 organizations.
Well, I've tried to make a difference. I have a family history of going back generations of making a difference.
That's an awful lot of groups.
Yes.
And the awards that you've received from our governor, from the state of California, and they go on and on and on and on. And it is very, very impressive. So I guess the tempo that your father set.
Yes.
Right, is really this very same tempo that you yourself are following on.
That's definitely true, and I think that that's our main responsibility, is to pass on to the next generation your morals and values, and to try and teach them that you know, there's a responsibility that we all have to make the world a better place.
Mm-hmm. You were telling me before the show that you had some meetings with some high school girls that you were that have asked you for some input. I found that very endearing.
Yes.
And inspiring. Can you share that story with us?
Well, over the years, I have done through Plus One Mentoring. I mentored a teen girl for 5 years until she turned 18, and I've every year we have our at our Intermountain Fair, we have our scholarship program for the young girls, and I've tried to help a little bit with that every year, just to kind of realize that these girls can realize their full potential, and to give them the confidence and support that they need to become public speakers, and to know that you know that they have a lot to contribute to society.
Well, they do. We all do. Everyone does.
Absolutely.
Sure,
absolutely.
Certainly. Mm-hmm. What is your top skills?
I have no idea. I don't know. I just like to work. I know yesterday I was working in my office, and I was thinking, it was about 6:37 last night, and I was thinking, well, I probably ought to, our office is in our home, and I thought, you know, I probably ought to stop. And I just, I like to be productive. I like to be able to, one of my quirky projects that I like to do is I like to pick up garbage along the side roads. And
so you pull over and pick some
up? Well, lots of times on the front of a ranch or whatever that we're either manager, we're owner of, or whatever, I oftentimes will go out and pick up garbage, and I just love doing that. In Siskiyou County, in McDowell, in the town of McDowell, every year the Prather Ranch puts out some dumpsters, and then I have the local 4-H club come, and I give each kid a garbage bag, and we walk around the little town of McDowell and pick up garbage, and and the people around McDowell can bring in their solid waste, and that way we give an opportunity for people to kind of clean up the area. That was the other thing. My father, he was always absolutely obsessed with making sure. He hated garbage, and so maybe he taught me a little bit about that. And so I still like to continue that today. And I actually, if you ask Ashton and his sister Catherine, we do pick up garbage. I take them out with me once in a while, and we pick up garbage. So I'm trying to instill in them that
you're full circle.
Well, I'm a little, I don't know
about
that.
Absolutely full circle. I know that you had a beautiful relationship with your mother.
I did. Mm-hmm.
And she also played a very important part of your life and as you evolved. And so tell us about your mother.
My mother was the oldest of six girls, And there's kind of a little interesting story there. Her father, so I get this from both sides of my family. Her father was the first chief of the Bureau of Vocational Education in California. Mm-hmm. And in 1929, he started the Future Farmers of America program, FFA program in California. And in 1933, the local senator approached him because they were going to close the doors to Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. Mm-hmm. At the time, it was a vocational school. And so he went down to San Luis Obispo, looked around, came back and gave his report to the senator that represented that area in Sacramento. And anyway, long story short, he ended up becoming half-time president of Cal Poly. At the time, it was a small school. And he continued his duties as the chief of the Bureau of Vocational Education mm-hmm. for California. He did not receive any compensation as president of Cal Poly because it was during the Depression and they didn't have the funding. So he essentially kept Cal Poly alive and served as their president for 33 years, from 1933 to 1966.
My goodness sakes.
And about the time I was born in the late 40s to early 50s, he started Cal Poly Pomona too. So he served as president of both of the universities. Mm-hmm. And I was really tickled this last Rose Parade. My grandparents always used to attend the Rose Parade because Cal Poly is the only school that has an entry in the parade. And my daughter and son-in-law and two other grandchildren went down and worked on the Cal Poly float. So I had a lot of pride in thinking how pleased my grandparents would have been to know that the generations have that connection to Cal Poly. It's right. A great school. And I've been accused of having green and gold blood. So I would not be here because my dad was a student at Cal Poly and met my mother when she was 15. They got married both after they finished college. He had, at the time it was a 3-year program, so he had to go to Utah to finish his bachelor's and mm-hmm. teaching credential. So
tell us a little bit more about your mother's influence.
Mother's influence, yes, I started. She was always, she was raised in a very Catholic family, a very mm-hmm. spiritual family, and she was very quiet, very opposite personality of my father, and she just always showed an unconditional love no matter what. I can never remember her ever getting angry at me or any of my siblings. She was just very loving, and she was just always there for us.
Your mother also did a lot of volunteering, did she?
Absolutely. She was always doing volunteer work. She always taught catechism. She volunteered at the hospital. She volunteered at the Women's Refuge Center. She also did a lot of Meals on Wheels. She was always a great example. So perhaps that's where part of my background comes from.
I think so. You know, there was a saying by Charles Kettinger, and he said he was a well-known inventor. Mm-hmm. Engineer, business person, and he developed 185 patents, right, if you can imagine that.
Right.
And he said, keep on going, and the chances are you will tumble on something, perhaps when you are least expecting it. I have never heard of anyone stumbling on something sitting down. Well, that kind of reminds me a little bit about you, and I don't know whether... You know, you tutored him or something.
I don't know. I just know. I know a lot of people ask me, well, why would you want to run for county supervisor?
And we're going to get into that.
Yeah, but it's a little bit. It's just like, well, time's short, and I got to try one more thing.
Wow, good for you. Perfect ending. We have to take another little break right now, and we'll be back with you in a very short while. So don't go too far. You are listening to the Henry Cuenca Radio Show at KKRN Community Supported Radio. And I am Henry Cuenca, and I am, of course, speaking here with Mary Rickert. I know this this idea of collecting garbage is seems to be pretty systemic.
Yes, it is.
And I know that you have a story about this with your grandfather, I believe, in collection of garbage.
Well, my grandfather, while he was president at Cal Poly, I've been told from people that knew him while he was serving as president, that he would get up about once a month and ride the garbage truck around in the early wee hours of the morning around the campus. And he said he learned more about what was going on the campus by doing that than gleaning information from any other source.
Really?
So, you could tell which professor was working if if they had, you know, a lot of garbage in their trash can.
Right.
You know, if somebody had a tendency to drink a little bit, you might find something there too. So he was a very bright, bright man.
Obviously.
He was very he was an incredible individual. He died when I was in high school, but he was an amazing man and as committed to Cal Poly as anyone you could ever imagine. It was his whole life.
So isn't that interesting that how that little bit of experience is transferred to you and to your grandchildren as well.
Well, the real lesson that I take from that is that it's really important to get out on the ground and see. And as a supervisor, I try to do that. Yesterday, I met with some people. I had some issues with the planning department. And I like to see for myself. I don't like to sit in an office. I like to get out on the ground and you know, whether it's tour the jail or whatever I do, it's to actually see and to talk. The important thing is to talk to the people that are actually doing the work and get feedback from them because they know on the ground what's really happening.
Absolutely. Let's shift a little bit, Mary. You are a very prominent political. Well, you are.
I don't consider myself.
I know you don't. That's because of your beautiful humbleness. But tell us about your political life.
Well, I don't consider myself as a political person. I consider myself that as a person who felt, you know, I had a bit of a spiritual experience as to that I should run for office. I do rely deeply on my faith, and I felt that, as you know, some of my grandchildren, I felt a true commitment to them. I was concerned about the future of Shasta County. I still am very concerned about the future of Shasta County and our society in general. And I really felt that this was the time. I wasn't getting any younger. And my husband said, too, if you're going to do this, you better do it now. So I felt it was the timing was appropriate. And I do have a strong background in mental health and substance abuse issues. And so I served on the Shasta County Mental Health Board, Drug and Alcohol Board for 10 years and have a real passion for that because I do think a lot of our societal issues these days surround a lot of the mental health and substance abuse issues.
There's no question they do. Where did the seed of running for a political office actually start?
Interestingly enough, I had several people ask me probably starting about 15 years ago to consider it. And then for some reason, I was appointed to the State Board of Forestry and Fire Protection in, I think it was 2013. And I served as the range livestock representative for the state of California. And it probably made me realize that that you know you do have the opportunity to maybe make a little bit of a difference and to be able to improve, you know, it's at that time it was the forestry world, you know, and improve the situation on, you know, from a political standpoint. So that kind of inspired me a little bit. Is like, you know,
was that the actual seed that's
I think that's probably where I finally said yes that I will consider running supervisor. A lot of people said, you know, that's basically you're going backwards. But I felt like Shasta County needed some real strong advocate in for the mental health part of our county government.
I know that there was something that happened when you were at church that the priest said
Yes.
That also kind of made you fast forward on this idea.
Right. I had I better make a decision here, and I'd kind of been praying a lot about it, and Father Hector from Bernie at our mission church in Fall River Valley, he gave a homily on being a leader is being of service to others, and that's really what we are all called to do.
Boy.
And so it was kind of a defining moment.
Absolutely.
And he probably doesn't realize that he helped seal the future for me, but it was a defining moment. And mm-hmm. just at that pivotal time when I was trying to make the decision, and that was the homily.
The timing was perfect. You got the message.
Yes, it was.
So tell me about the fortune cookie.
That was kind of like the frosting on the cake. I was right around that same 2 or 3 days or whenever it was. I was in Mount Shasta. Jim and I were coming home from McDowell, and I opened up. We stopped at a Chinese restaurant there, opened up a fortune cookie, and it said something about, you have an interest in political issues and you'd make a great statesman and leader. So, and I thought to myself, I've eaten a lot
of
Chinese.
Your husband didn't put that in there,
no, and it wasn't, he didn't open it. I opened it. And I thought, gee, I've eaten Chinese food all my life. And I never recall getting a fortune cookie that said something to that effect. So I thought, well, here again, it was kind of two distinct messages.
Wow, that's terrific. Behavioral research suggests that most effective people are those who understand themselves well mm-hmm. because they know their strengths and they know their weaknesses. So they develop the strategies to meet the demands of their environment by picking up assistance in the areas that they're weakest in. So I think that you are the model for this type of a person that has tremendous insight to yourself. And I would take it one step further and say that your relationship with your husband has to be almost a good, perfect fit to compensate.
I think he'd find that quite humorous. I think we've managed... As the older I get, I think there's one characteristic that I can't emphasize enough that I'm finding, and I read articles that I think perseverance and grit are two characteristics that people really need to try and cultivate and develop in their lives. Is you just never give up, mm-hmm. whether it's marriage, whether it's ranching, whether it's
that's life.
That's life in general, and I think that so often people give up. And I think that's something, I remember my father at the age of 80 started farming again. He loved to farm, but he drove 90 miles from Atascadero to Lemoore every day.
Really?
Until he was 90 years old.
Oh,
we finally had to hire somebody the last few months of his life. He lived to his 91. He was never happier in his life than he was in that last decade of his life farming. And he just never gave up. And it was a tough piece of ground. And I remember my oldest brother and I both saying, boy, what's Dad done now? But boy, did he prove us wrong.
Wow.
But it was his
Amazing.
Perseverance and his grit. And that to me is a real a jewel that we all need to really cultivate in our lives is being able to never give up.
Very, very, very well said. What is the true basis of your inspiration to keep this going?
Oh, that's a good question. I just firmly believe I love the land. I love our cows. I love my grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
I love Shasta County. I think we have incredible resources here, and I think it's really important that whatever we do in life, that we just make the world a better place.
Mm-hmm. I know that you have, in the political context of being a supervisor, mm-hmm. what is it that you find the most challenging aspect of serving in that capacity?
I have found one is I feel like I wish there were three of me because oftentimes there's 2-3 events that are scheduled at the same time, and I think, oh, which one can I fit in? That's very challenging for me. The other is that I think people too often judge me and have preconceived notions of who I am and where I'm coming from. And I'm often, you know, you get criticized heavily and you're called names and all kinds of things. But if they really knew me and took the time to sit down and understand, I think it's really important that people listen to both sides of every story, that there's it's a lot more complex than they think. And mm-hmm. and that's probably two of the more biggest challenges. And I'm very concerned too about, you know, our a lot of our social issues that we have. I think that's really a problem in our society today.
Could you expand on that a little bit?
Well, yes, I do. You know, I was listening to a news show last night when I was working in my office, and it was talking about the breakdown of the family and how important that to keep the family together, to keep the family unit functioning. And I just know how much I appreciate now at my age, my parents and all that they did when it wasn't always easy. And I think that we need to rely on our spiritual values more in this country. I think that's a problem. Mm-hmm. I think that we need to really look at some of our social issues. I think a lot of parents need to really get more invested in their children and the time, mm-hmm. take the time that's needed to raise healthy adults. Mm-hmm. Substance abuse is, I read an article the other day, it's not so much the kids are despairing as much as there's just a lot of availability. And I am going to, this is a message I have been sharing every opportunity I get. I brought a speaker to Reading about heroin in November, mm-hmm. And all the opioid issue. One thing I cannot emphasize enough is everyone in Shasta County can help with this problem. Mm-hmm. What you can do, and it's very simple, lock up your medicine cabinet, mm-hmm. either in or put your any kind of narcotics in a, if you have a gun safe in the house. I toured the jail recently, and I talked to some of the correctional officers, and they said that about 80% of the people that are incarcerated, that there's a drug as a result of some kind of drug crime. Mm-hmm. And they often would ask these that are booked in to jail, how'd you get started? Mm-hmm. And they often said, my parents or my grandparents' medicine cabinet. Mm-hmm. So that's something I want everybody to think about.
I still am a chaplain at the county jail, mm-hmm. as well as several state prisons,
uh-huh.
and met with many inmates, mm-hmm. and got very, very close to a number of them. And I would ask the very same question about how they got started on this thing, uh-huh. and it's very similar responses to what you're saying. And it just so bad to see the mm-hmm. thousands of lives
wasted.
That, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That and all of the inmates that I had over the 7 years, they all received life sentences because they were very serious mm-hmm. crimes that they committed. You know, you have a history, a family history of priests.
I do.
And
mm-hmm.
nuns. Mm-hmm. They go back way, 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 way.
On both
back.
Sides of my family, my father's and my mother's, yes.
Uh-huh. So that no doubt had a bearing with the spiritualness that, mm-hmm. that you were handed by your parents.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so that is very fortunate, I guess you could say, to have had those influences.
Well, I had a couple of, I think about five times great uncles that came out from Prince Edward Island and helped start the Christian Brothers in San Francisco and the Christian Brothers Winery, uh-huh. two of my direct relatives, yes.
We have to, Mary, take another
sure.
break. So we're going to take a break. And listeners, we're going to be right back. And don't move very far. Very good. Thank you. You are listening to the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN Community Supported Radio. And I'm Henry Cuenca, of course, and I'm speaking with our wonderful guest, Mary Rickert. Mary, I know that your great uncle made his mark on society in a very big way.
Yes, he did.
And can you tell us about that?
He was a pediatrician in San Francisco, and he was one of seven siblings. It's my grandfather's, my maternal grandfather's brother. And he saw a need and developed the, as my understanding, I read an article in the Chronicle several years ago, the first home for unwed mothers. It was a Catholic based mm-hmm. home, but he opened that many, many years ago. Mm-hmm. So by example, I've seen all kinds of very creative things in my family's past.
Very, very rich
right.
history.
They always, they were very giving of themselves, serving others.
I wonder if you can tell me where this came from. I'm going to read something here. I wonder if you can tell me where this came from. A gracious woman gains respect, but ruthless men gain only wealth.
Well, that's an interesting saying.
Isn't it?
I have no idea.
What happens to come from the Bible is
the Bible.
Proverbs 15.
Okay.
But isn't there a tremendous amount of significance in that statement?
That I'll have to go back and reread that. that is very true. And I do try. I read the Word Among Us at night. I don't know if you're familiar with that, Henry, but
no, I'm not.
It's a meditation on the daily readings. And so I'll have to look for that.
Can you tell us the you had an experience with the FFA when you were about about a teenager?
Yes, I was.
That was really a hallmark event for you. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I guess you could say I always had a little bit of spunkiness to me in the sense that for years, as I said, my grandfather started the FFA program in 1929, and it was 1968, and girls were not part of the FFA program. Mm-hmm. It was always an all-male program. And so I showed cattle with my brothers, but I could only show in 4-H, and I wasn't legally in FFA. So my junior year, I was one of a handful of girls that lobbied at the state FFA convention to allow girls in becoming members of the FFA. And so I was among the first. I was the first and only female to show at Cal Expo that year and at Cal Palace. And it was probably, I was a feminist and didn't even know it, but having four brothers, I really felt that it really wasn't fair to females that we were being excluded. And as you see today, the FFA programs all throughout the state and the nation, the females play a large role in the leadership of that program. And so every time I see a female with an FFA jacket, I smile to myself just a little bit. I'm so proud that I was part of that.
Well, you
breaking that ceiling.
We are indebted to you.
Well, if it wasn't me, it would have been someone else, but I was part of it, and I was really pleased to be a part of that.
When I had asked you what you're not good at?
A lot of things. I can't sing. I don't play musical instruments.
Yeah, but you do sing in a different way.
Well,
but you had said that one of the things you're not good at is not slowing down or relaxing.
Yeah, that's a hard one for me. I do have a hard time, but I don't know. I look at my father, and he was just always moving. And like I say, he started his fourth or fifth career at the age of 80 and just thrived. So I hope that if I have good health, that I can continue in his footsteps.
Do you have a vision for yourself?
That's interesting question. I not really. I just want to keep doing.
That is a vision.
Yeah, I guess that is my vision, is just keep doing what I'm doing. I really do hope during my term as a supervisor, I can help in any way. I get frustrated that I can't make more of an impact, especially with our substance abuse issues in Shasta County and One thing I want to talk about a little bit is something called ACEs. I think you and I mentioned, we've talked about this before. It's called Adverse Childhood Experiences, and it's kind of a new research that's been done in the last 10 years. And it basically, you can assess children and see how many risk factors that they have in terms of developing problems as an adult, behavioral and health-wise too. And so if we can educate everyone in Shasta County about ACEs and how we all, as you know, it takes a village, as community members can get involved and to improve the lives of young people that really need our help. I think that's really important. And I know in the town of Burney that Cindy Dodds, for instance, is working on that, and we're trying to educate the communities more about that particular issue.
You know, with all of the achievements that that you've received and honors of activities, and I said they're well into the 30s. What are you most proudest of?
Well, that's a tough question. You know, awards are I guess they validate what you're doing, and I'm hoping that awards are looked at as setting an example, and to basically be a learning opportunity for other people to follow in your footsteps. And it's not just about, gee, I'm great. It's really about educating other people and to try and help them see, for instance, in their cattle operation, how they're handling practices or stewardship of the land, how we do rotational grazing and these, you know, won't get into the nuances of all that. It'd be a little boring to most of your listeners. But the point is that the people learn from that that's what I consider that to be the reason that we've had some of these awards. Probably of any of the awards, I was most touched by when we were chosen as the Beef Producer of the Year by the California Beef Improvement Federation, and that was, we were selected by industry leaders and a lot of educators in like Cornell, and that was the review team, and to be selected from is basically all of North America, and that was a real honor to be acknowledged by your peers that what you were doing was unique and deserved that recognition. So that one particularly touched me.
I can see why.
Just to have achieved that level of recognition.
Was there any other award that?
We received a lot of the Aldo Leopold Award in twice now, but in 2015 we were for the state of California, and that he was a conservationist, and it's so important. A lot of the ranches that we're involved with have conservation easements on them, and that's to preserve them into perpetuity. They'll never be developed. Our grandchildren probably won't appreciate that fact because they'll never be able to be subdivided and worth much. They aren't going to have a lot of value other than for grazing. But it was important to Jim and I that we feel that that's a more important use in our lives because that reflects our values.
Absolutely.
So, and we hope that they develop a love for the land. Any chance Jim and I get, we go out in our gator, and we've done it the last two Saturday mornings. We gave ourselves like 2 hours because I had to get back up the mountain to do some supervisor duties. But we just go out and we clear branches that have fallen off of trees, and we're just always trying to improve the land and to really develop. It's so important for young people to get in touch with nature. It's so soothing and therapeutic for the soul.
There's no question about
that. And so I highly encourage that connection, and anytime we can get outside, it's better than any, in my opinion, any drug possible.
Right. So yeah, certainly I can understand that. You received the Governor's Economic and Environmental Leadership Award in 2015.
And in 2005, we have done it twice.
Could you tell us a little bit about that?
That basically just looks at your operation and a lot of the... We've done so much partnering with a lot of government agencies. We have a program at the NRCS, for instance, on one ranch, looking at our bird population. And we're always trying to work with agencies, again, so that people can look to us as to how to improve their operation. And so you've got to inspire people to be able to figure out how to economically stay in business, which sometimes isn't easy. The last couple of years have been a struggle. I had one of our fellow supervisors at one of our board meetings the other day make reference about, well, agriculture, they've got plenty of money, and they all laughed at me because I about came up out of my chair saying, wait a minute, lack correction. But people don't think of it as, you're basically land poor is what you are, but you have a responsibility to that land, and it's so important that you instill in the next generation that love for the land and that need to make sure that land is taken care of in a very responsible manner.
I think consistent with what you're saying, Aristotle said, I believe in God, but I call it nature.
Oh, that I can relate to, yes. And you know, when you're out there, you do feel God all around you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you do.
Mary, everybody's got a story to tell, or two, or three, or four, or five. Gosh. And I would guess that you have more than one story to tell about your life. And I wonder if you could just tell us a story that maybe we didn't cover in our interview here that you find most enduring to you.
Well, this probably, and you kind of caught me off guard, but this probably is the most difficult story to talk about, but it also has made me a stronger person and hopefully a more compassionate person and an empathetic person. I have been personally touched with a child with a diagnosed mental illness. It's been a struggle, and I can't even begin to tell you what a struggle it's been. Mm-hmm. It's been at times horrific, but it also has taught me that everybody has a story, that we can't be judgmental, that we need to be empathetic and to be compassionate, and that if nothing else, that's what I've learned from it. It hasn't been easy, and it will continue to be a struggle.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us, Mary, and our listeners. Well, Mary, I think our time is running out here. Shane said we can't take another hour. So we're going to have to close off, and I thank you very, very much for attending. And I very much appreciate your openness that you've expressed to us. And for our listeners, you have been listening to community-supported KKRN 88.5 FM. We are supported by listeners like you and brought to you by volunteers from the community. Are you ready to support your local community radio? To become a listener-supporter, go to our website, kkrn.org, and click on the donate button, or mail a check to P.O. Box 188 Montgomery Creek, California, 96065. You can call us at 530-337-1101 to volunteer at KKRN Community Radio or to learn more about us. Thank you for listening to the Henry Cuenca Radio Show, where we in earnest are working to make our community and our world a better place. Please tune in to my next show Tuesday, March 6th at 8 o'clock Pacific Time, where you will meet a real worldly angel changing lives by her passion and pledge of making the world a better place, and hear her firsthand account of her life-changing epiphany. Please remember today's quotation, keep on going, and the chances are you will.
This is Jordan Hare.
You will stumble on something, not sitting down. Charles Keating. Send me an email at KKRN. You can find me on your website. Thank you very much for listening, and have a great day.
By Redding Subaru, joining our listeners in supporting KKRN. Redding Subaru offers new and Subaru